Welcome to Fundamentally Human, a podcast about mental health topics unpacked in an easy-to-understand way. My name is Shervin, and I'm your host. Let's get started. Welcome to the last episode of 2021. Yay! It's surreal to think that I'm almost at the one-year mark of Fundamentally Human. For those who are listening, thank you so much, and I hope you've been well and enjoying the holiday season so far. For me, it's been a busy last few weeks, and I finally have some space to breathe because I'm on break from school until January. So December tends to be a bittersweet month. It's usually a time of reflection of the past year, and it's also time to gear up for the year ahead. For today's episode, I would like to reflect on my first 4 months as a psychotherapist intern and share some learning with you guys. It's definitely been a humbling and amazing past few months learning from other therapists and from my clients. To get started, I'd like to go over 5 common themes I've seen from my clients. The first is a constant focus on the negatives and the downs. So I typically start off most of my sessions by asking my clients, well, what are the ups and downs of the past week or two since I've last seen you? Most of the time, they'll share their downs, actually probably 9 out of 10 times. And they're going to tell me that they didn't have any ups. While I recognize that my clients are usually and probably coming to therapy because they're looking for support or feeling low, it doesn't mean that the only things they focus on are the downs. We do a lot of strengthening, a lot of thinking about what went well, reframing situations and sessions. So I encourage my clients to take a moment to think about what are the ups. It doesn't have to be a huge occurrence, but it could be anything that made them feel comfortable, excited, or satisfied. After a few minutes, clients will then share that, oh, they had dinner with a family member, they did well on a test they prepared for, or they caught up with a friend they haven't spoken to in a while. I want to emphasize that ups and downs are subjective and they're defined by each person. What that means is you can decide how much a situation impacts you, and you also get to celebrate the small wins in your life. For me, I created a page in my bullet journal to note down all the highlights from the year, including the hikes I went on and some projects or wins that I've started and had. Every time I flip through or add to that page, it's always been a pleasant and heartwarming reminder to myself of the things that have gone well or that I consider a win. It's so much easier to remember the bad things that have happened to us because they're things that aren't considered normal or expected, but I encourage you to also remember and celebrate the ups. 1 year is 365 days, except for leap years, so there's a lot of days where things will happen, lots of ups and lots of downs. Maybe you went out for a walk this week, or you finally cleaned up an area of your place, or you just have some time to yourself that you haven't had in a while. It could be anything. And you get to define what an up is and what a down is for you. So my first point was that constant focus on the negatives and downs, but reminding yourself that you get to decide what that looks like for you. With the second theme, I want to talk about identifying emotions or self-regulation. I see many people, including myself, describing themselves as feeling stressed, overwhelmed, and anxious. Those three and depressed are probably the more common emotions that I see many people using to describe themselves, especially my clients. So it can be helpful to identify the emotion that you're feeling because each mood, emotion, and feeling, they vary as symptoms and the way you deal with them or coping mechanisms. Ideally, as therapists, we like to equip our clients with skills and strategies so that they can become their own therapists afterwards. When clients are able to identify their emotions, they're building skills in self-regulation and emotional regulation. So what does that mean? It means that they're learning how to take care of themselves and to recognize what they need, what brings them comfort, and how they can move through difficult situations. I'm going to use anxiety as an example. Anxiety is your body's natural response to stress, and you're feeling this fear or apprehension about what's going to come next or what's going to happen. So some physical symptoms include having an elevated heart rate, sweaty or clammy palms, and racing thoughts going at 100 kilometers per hour. I don't know what that is, miles, for all my American friends, but basically it means it's really fast. What other emotions also have these kind of physical symptoms? When you're feeling excited, scared, or nervous, you're actually having similar symptoms, but they all have different meanings behind them. You could be nervous and excited at the same time, but feeling nervous means being agitated, alarmed. Whereas feeling excited can mean being enthusiastic, eager, or having a higher state of energy. Perhaps you're about to speak in front of a group of people. You're more likely to be nervous than you are excited, and how you cope with each emotion is different too. For instance, if you're nervous about public speaking, it might help to remind yourself how much you prepared beforehand. On the other hand, if you're feeling excited because you're about to watch a movie you've been looking forward to, it might not make sense to want to take a few deep breaths to calm down because you're basking in that excitement. You want to feel elevated. But you might want to take those few breaths before you do your speech. So there are different ways to handle each of our emotions, even if the physical symptoms are similar. Learning how to identify what emotion you're feeling is a powerful tool that develops self-regulation. It can help in so many ways, like engaging in healthy coping mechanisms and recognizing what your body and mind need. In turn, this could lead to healthier relationships and improved communication. For me, in my sessions with clients, I ask them to have a thought record. Write down situations between our sessions where they feel anxious, which is usually the emotion that they're trying to deal with. But then actually think about what exactly is the emotion other than anxiety that they're feeling. Usually they'll look at a feelings wheel that I found online and you can also see on my blog. And you can check that out to see maybe having a thought record of your own and identifying the emotions and different coping mechanisms that come with each emotion or situation can look very different. So that's point number two about identifying emotions and self-regulation. The third theme I want to talk about is expectations. Many of us grew up learning the golden rule of treating others the way you want to be treated. This made a lot of sense to me when I was younger, because if you don't like to be treated a certain way, why would you do that to someone else? However, after learning a bit more about psychology, working with clients, and about empathy, I disagree with this golden rule. Instead, I encourage you to consider this. Treat others the way that they want to be treated. I'm going to share a small story on fairness to help really drive this example home. A teacher taught her students this concept by asking students if they've ever scraped their elbow before. Naturally, all of them raised their hands, so she put a Band-Aid on one student's elbow. Moving on, she then asked her students if they've ever bumped their heads. And naturally, all of them raised their hands again. She expressed her empathy, saying, "Wow, it sucks to have bumped your head. I imagine how much that hurts." But then decided to give another student a Band-Aid for their elbow. Confusing, right? The students were also confused, but it was actually an important lesson of what fairness looks like. For instance, if someone's having social anxiety and has difficulty meeting new people, whereas you are comfortable around strangers, might be helpful to be their buddy for the night, or to start by having smaller group sessions, or rather smaller group meetings with other friends, so they slowly warm up and feel comfortable. I bring up this example about social anxiety and about the teacher giving out band-aids to students' elbows, because it's an indication of how easy it is for us to be subjective and to consider situations with only our perspectives. I've noticed a number of individuals becoming angry and upset at others when they haven't met their expectations, and I ask them, well, did you tell them that that's what you wanted? Most of the time, the answer is no. Well, they should know better, or they should know to do that. I encourage you to consider communicating what you would like in a situation rather than expecting others to read your mind and to do things that are normal for you but are foreign to them. Normal has a completely different definition in everyone's minds. What's comfortable for you is not going to be the same for others. So instead of thinking they should know better, think about what you would like out of the situation or what you would like them to do, and then tell them. So that's my piece on expectations. The fourth theme I've noticed is that whole reaction and response and clients thinking it's not okay to be angry or upset. I've noticed that many people tend to see emotions like anger, frustration, annoyance, and rage as negative and abnormal, whereas excitement and happiness are normal. This can impact the way we self-regulate because we end up hiding or running away from those quote-unquote negative reactions. I've mentioned this in a different episode, but I'm going to use the same example to really hammer it home. Reactions are normal. If someone cuts you off on a rainy night without their blinkers on, and it's dark, cold, and you're scared, you might feel shocked, upset, annoyed, or furious that they did something so dangerous. However, how you choose to respond can be entirely different and something you have time to consider. Some responses might be getting angry and wanting to speed up and cut the other person off, honking your horn, swearing loudly in your car, or shrugging it off. In their book Burnout, The Secret to Solving the Stress Cycle, Dr. Emily Nagowski and Dr. Amelia Nagowski describe how stress can lead to burnout. Picture this. You're on a bus ride home and the traffic is worse than usual. It's rainy and someone's umbrella is dripping on your bag and you've just had the longest day possible. When you finally arrive home, yes, you've dealt with the stressor by getting out of the traffic and off the bus, but you're still in the same stress response cycle, and your body and mind need to work through the stress itself, not just the stressor. When this happens regularly, where you're not dealing with the stress itself, when the stress response cycle doesn't get completed, it becomes chronically activated, and it can lead to high blood pressure, poor digestion, and low energy levels. To finish the stress cycle, you could do some type of physical activity like cleaning for a few minutes or doing some jumping jacks even. Now, you don't have to do 500 jumping jacks. It could even be 5 just to loosen up your body, get your heart pumping a little bit. Maybe it's opening the window and taking a few deep breaths, hugging someone or something, a stuffed animal, a pillow, or making some warm tea to soothe you. What's happening is your body just went through a fight or flight mode, so it needs time to release and decompress. Of course, it's a lot easier to say these things and to think about them in hindsight compared to actually being in the situation. However, when you practice identifying emotions and self-regulation, it can be more automatic and easier over time because these type of things become a habit. Sometimes it'll still be difficult and we'll have responses that we're not proud of, but how we move through those situations will also change. Are you starting to see a little bit of how all these themes actually come back in full circle and relate? I have one more for you, but this one was about reactions and responses. And my last theme is the little things add up and to recognize what you need. Many of us, if not all, have likely experienced moments where we engage in all or nothing or black and white thinking. In particular, we might notice this when we're trying to make ourselves feel better. I know I've mentioned how helpful it has been to go for a walk and to get some fresh air during some of my episodes, and I'm sure many of you have seen self-care strategies that tell you to go walk, go call a friend, take a bath, etc. What people might not recognize is that to go out for a walk, you might need to change your clothes, put on a jacket if it's cold, put your shoes on, your socks on, grab your keys, your belongings, and then finally go outside. And then you might have forgotten something, so you have to go back in and then go back outside. There are several steps you have to take before going for a walk, and that can be exhausting already. Maybe you don't have the capacity to go outside, or it's raining really hard, but you need to decompress because you've been stuck inside, or you just received an email that has upset you. When we think about the stress response cycle that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we might be distracting ourselves by closing the email, not looking at it, or sitting in our own dread. But what's often missing is the step to feeling better or at ease instead of hiding or running away from our stressors. Going for a walk every time we feel down or annoyed probably isn't feasible, but it could be standing up to stretch, getting some water to drink, or cracking open our windows for some fresh air. I like to just open my door from time to time and just stand outside for a couple of seconds. Now, you're boiling down these activities, that going out for a walk, into one or two steps, rather than five steps to get yourself outside for 10 minutes. I encourage you to think about how you might be able to take one or two steps forward to feeling better, instead of putting that pressure on yourself to have to finish the whole race at once, to have to go outside so you feel better or productive, to have to do everything today. The little things do add up. Listen to your body and mind and what makes sense for you at each moment. So that's my last theme about little things adding up and recognizing what you need in the moment. While those are themes I've observed and learned from my clients, I've noticed some thoughts that have come up for myself in the last few months too. And I'll name two of them. The first is imposter syndrome. Oh goodness, this comes in waves. It's that fear of not knowing what to say. It's that fear of, oh my gosh, I look so young. My clients are going to take me seriously or think I have nothing to tell them. And then it's also the idea of, wow, I'm working so much harder than my clients are to think of things to say. On the outside, I would like to think I'm typically calm, warm, and welcoming, especially in the face of my clients. But on the inside, there are times where I'm freaking out or panicking. Thoughts like, what should I say next? And am I even helping this person? Are normal and frequent. I recognize that I put a lot of pressure on myself to help clients create change or to feel supported. But I do try to remind myself that I'm on a lifelong journey of learning, and at most, even if I forget everything, I'm here to hold space for the client and to support them through a challenging moment. One of my therapist friends told me, if you come out of every session thinking you've nailed it, especially in the beginning, you're probably not a good therapist. And I couldn't agree more. Whenever I have moments of learning or how things maybe didn't go the way I planned or went poorly, then I think to myself, okay, well, what can I do for next time? So it's about not basking in that failure, not beating ourselves up for not doing what we intended to do, and then just looking at our whole life as a way to keep learning instead of thinking I have to nail it right away. As for the piece about looking young, honestly, there's not a lot I can change about that, but what I can change is the presence I give. Feeling confident, feeling calm, feeling ready whenever I'm with my clients. I'm holding space for them. They have a lot to worry about on their own plates, so they're not going to be sitting in a session judging me or judging what I'm saying. Well, they're listening to what I'm saying, but they're not evaluating me. That's the job of my supervisor, not my clients, in a sense. As for thinking if I'm helping enough or about working harder than my clients, I tried to also remind myself that, you know what, this is an open conversation. I always leave room with my clients to share how they're feeling about our session, what comes up for them, what points they're going to take with them at the end. And it's the same thing for many areas of our life and for our relationships with other people. It's okay to ask people how things are going, any feedback they have, any comments. So that's my piece on imposter syndrome coming in waves. And just telling ourselves that we're always going to be learning and failure happens. The last point I want to talk about is debriefing and having a support network and how crucial it is to your own well-being. In the last few months, I've worked with at least 20 clients and many of them share very, very heavy stories, experiences, and situations. It can be a lot at times, especially if it's later in the evening or after a long day of work with my day job. I find that it's been incredibly helpful to reach out to people around me, whether it's to vent, go for a walk, play games, or debrief with another therapist about what my client just shared. I guess at this point, I'm going back full circle with the stress response cycle. So my stressor is gone because my session ended. I finished work for the day, but I still need to complete the cycle. That's when talking with others or doing activities that are relaxing or fun kick in. One of the things I usually ask my clients is about their support network and who they speak with when they're having a low moment or even an up moment to share your success and wins. I ask you, the listener, the same question. Who is in your support network? Moving forward with the podcast, I don't have a specific theme anymore like I've had for the past 3 seasons. So season 4 onwards will just be about any topic with a focus on mental health aspects. I want to continue sharing and documenting my learning with everyone in hopes that some of the things I bring up can be helpful for you or someone in your life. I'm a firm believer in you don't know what you don't know. And I hope that I can fill some gaps of knowledge for you on how to strengthen and exercise your mental health muscle. Thank you so much for your support over the last year. Thank you for everyone who sent me kind messages, feedback, voice memos on Anchor about my podcast, my episodes, my blogs. Every time I receive one of those, it's been a helpful reminder of what I'm doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing. So thank you. Your support has been so meaningful. I hope you all have a restful holiday season and I'll see you in 2022. To support my podcast and help reach others, please follow and share it with anyone who is looking to learn a bit more about mental health. For any listeners who are visual learners or would like some more resources, I invite you to read my blog posts on shervin.ca and to follow my Twitter at @HelloShervin for updates. Take care and see you next time. Bye.